Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell. I'm here today talking social media strategy. On the phone with me today from New York is Melanie Diesel, the social media strategist for the New York Times. When I say social media strategist for the New York Times, could you sort of explain what the scope of your position is?
Sure, yeah. So I actually work for T Brand Studio, which is the in-house branded content unit in the advertising department at the New York Times. So
okay.
What that means is that I actually don't work so much with the newsroom content. I don't work with that at all, actually. I work with just the content that we create in partnership with brands that lives in the New York Times online environment.
Okay. So now why don't you start by sort of defining what brands are when it comes to the New York Times?
Sure. So, I mean, essentially what happens is, we get many kinds of brands, whether it's a travel brand, it could be a hotel, or whether it's a product. Maybe we have a luxury fashion retailer that wants to advertise with us. And obviously they have the standard options. They can buy placements in the paper, or they can buy placements on our website, banner units and things. But for some brands, they sort of have a story of their own that they want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come to us, and we're able to form a partnership wherein they give us an idea of what some of their goals are, what some of the things they're trying to express as a brand. And we're able to leverage our own skills within T Brand Studio, almost like our own mini newsroom, to help tell those stories. So just as an example, we had a piece that launched in June that was in partnership with Netflix and Orange is the New Black. So they came to us and said, we're releasing season 2, and we want to raise awareness about the content of the show and what the show's about. So we worked with them, and we came up with a story that sort of took a step back from the brand, from the show itself, and told a higher-level story about women in prison and their unique experience of incarceration, and what sort of programming was or wasn't available for women who are in prison. So it wasn't necessarily about Orange is the New Black, but it was about what Orange is the New Black is about. And then my job was to, that piece, I happened to have written it, but my main purpose on that piece was to then come in after the fact and make sure that it was being seeded on social media in a way that the right kind of audience was finding it. So that amounts to finding folks who are advocates for prison reform, finding folks who maybe engage and like the actors and actresses on the show, or folks in general who are TV fans who maybe are active in politics, anyone who's likely to engage with that sort of content. So it's definitely a challenge. It's a unique process for each advertiser we work with and each piece of content we make, but it definitely keeps it exciting.
So is it that you actually create like a story or something that sort of accompanies the advertising, the product on the online, and you
yeah.
sort of roll that out?
Yeah, absolutely. So what the page was, this piece for Netflix was actually a 1,500-word reported piece, and my background is in journalism, so I was lucky enough to come in and be able to actually report the piece. We interviewed current and former prisoners. We interviewed reform workers. We interviewed researchers who have done research on what sort of programming works and doesn't work in prison environments. So we had that 1,500-word piece, and we paired it with a 3-part mini-documentary that was created by T Brand Studios' director of branded video. So she and her production team were able to create a mini-documentary of sorts that had these voices of women who have experienced this, able to tell their own stories, some of them for the first time. We also brought in an illustrator who was able to create these beautiful parallax scrolling illustrations on the page to pair with it and keep it engaging. We had some infographics and pull quotes, so it was really a piece of brand journalism. And it lived on the New York Times website in a clearly labeled environment that says it was paid for and posted by the Netflix team and Orange is the New Black. So we weren't trying to fool anybody. We just wanted to be able to help Netflix tell a story that was more than just watch season 2.
So part of your strategy then to create original content that is not necessarily straight 100% reflective of the content, that it's not like you're interviewing the stars of the show. You're actually creating something, you're saying, hey, this is a show that's about, women in prison. Why don't we do a story about women in prison, and then they can sort of sponsor that? Is that sort of the approach to
yeah.
the types of brands
yeah.
you do?
Exactly, and I think there's always a spectrum. There's always going to be stories that are maybe a little more branded because that fits what that advertiser is looking for. But I think most of us here at T Brand Studio come from editorial backgrounds. So for us, it's really important for us whenever we can, to help guide a brand toward the storytelling that I hope they're coming to the New York Times for, and the storytelling that readers are coming to the New York Times for. And so when we when we can find a happy medium there where we're able to tell a real story that matters, that happens to be something, you know, that is useful for the brand to be aligned with, I think that's the perfect medium.
Do you have the opportunity to sort of repurpose content that comes from the Times at all, or is this all original stuff that you're producing?
So this is all original stuff. So we have a very strict separation of church and state here. I think, that's why it's so clear for us. We always clarify,
Sure.
we do work for the advertising department of the New York Times. You know, we don't want any confusion. There's 163 years of incredible brand equity that we don't even want to, associate ourselves with unfairly. You know, that belongs to them, and they've earned it, and they can live with, they can leverage that. I think it's only fair for us to sort of have to establish some of our own clout on the advertising side. So while we are, of course, a part of the Times and our content lives on the New York Times website, it is a clear distinction that we're creating content exclusively within our team here in the advertising department.
And now this isn't something necessarily that's that unusual in sort of the history of journalism, that there is sort of branded content that helps fill out that paper, that helps sort of pay the bills. But, certainly it's really important to make sure that, you have that distinction about what you guys are doing and what the newsroom side of the New York Times is doing. And one of the things we try to do in this podcast is to talk about, with the way digital has changed journalism, the way people can sort of leverage the strengths of journalism or of digital journalism to sort of create new content and create new revenue streams. And this seems like sort of a, updating of something, paid content that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, branded content, and when you think about it from what it used to be, that was John Deere printing a catalog. That was, Betty Crocker putting a recipe on the back of a box. They were creating content. Brands have been creating content for a really long time. The difference is now, just as publishers are adjusting to all of these incredible tools we have at our disposal with the rise of digital and of smartphones and tablets and all of that, just as publishers are adjusting, now brands are too, and they're realizing that for many of them, they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They can leverage those tools by partnering with a publisher. And obviously there's benefits for publishers in that too, in being able to help, support the quality journalism that all of us are creating on the editorial side. So I think, there's always a delicate balance, but it's definitely an opportunity. And one of the opportunities is now that we're going digital, you can create a whole strategy behind making sure that content is reaching the audience you want. And, again, leveraging these new tools of social media, recirculation across the web. We have incredible tools at our disposal to make sure we're finding the right audience for that stuff, rather than, Betty Crocker's recipes on the back of a box that are going to be found by everyone who wants to buy a box of mix. We're now going out and finding that audience ourselves.
Can you sort of talk about how you do that? What is it you're using to track people and, find the type of people that you want to get this content to?
Sure. So obviously we have an incredible audience here on the Times website. So one element of every single plan always is on-site media. We're able to target relevant content by standard ad placements, so banners and homepage units and section fronts and things like that, standard media placements that can drive to these pages. We have specialized places across the site where we promote just this type of content, near our editorial so that our readers can see it, but it's clearly labeled. So that's part of it too. But in terms of finding the audience beyond the Times website, what I do for this is I essentially create a custom plan for each and every page that we create. And which networks and which strategies I use, there's a lot of things that go into deciding that, and part of it is what kind of content are we making. So video does better on certain websites than on others. So if we have video elements, I want to think about websites like Facebook, where video tends to take up a good part of your feed and really engage. If the content has photos, then maybe we want to think about Pinterest, or maybe we want to think about Instagram, finding where the content is the most natural fit to the network. But another layer of that is obviously figuring out where the audience that they want to reach is located. So every single network has its own audience base. Some are more prominent with certain age brackets. Some are more prominent with certain geographic locations or with certain genders, with certain career paths. And every single advertiser has a target audience of people who are buying or perhaps are not buying, and they want them to buy their products. So creating a custom plan that includes the right balance of the different networks, and then going out and purchasing placements on those networks that drive back to these pages. So finding the audience that is interested in this content and making sure they have a door to get in and view it.
So is the buyer, do they come to you and say, look, I've got this product, I want to hit this particular audience? Or are you sort of meeting them in the middle and saying, you know, maybe this is who your audience is. This is how we can bring that your product to those on best display for that particular audience.
Yeah, so I think it's always a balance. I think every advertiser has their own goals. And again, obviously, the type of content we create for them, because I only do the promotion for the paid post branded content that lives on the Times website. So it's always a balance of figuring out what works for them, for their audience, and for the content we're making for them. But I think in general, I think when we get into the advertising mindset, we think about customers, and we have to remember that when we're talking about branded content, we're talking about readers, not customers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And readers are people, and people are everywhere. So sometimes it may be an overlap that you're not expecting. You know, you think your audience are, you know, sports watchers, but what you don't realize is perhaps it's not the fact that they watch sports, it's the fact that they're men in the age bracket of 18 to 25 that happens to be what you're looking for, not just the sports watchers. So there's a lot of science that goes into it. And obviously every network in the back end has their own targeting parameters. So one of the things that's really interesting about Facebook that you don't really think about until you think about targeting is take a step back and think about all the information about yourself that you've entered on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
So Facebook knows where you went to school. It knows where you live. It knows what sort of profession you have and all of your friends have. It knows whether you're in a relationship and how long you've been in one. It knows whether you have kids. It knows whether you're recently pregnant. You know, there's so much information in there that makes it such a rich environment for finding an audience that you're looking for. So just as an example, and we haven't done this to date, but it's an easy to explain example. Imagine if we were working with, a jewelry client who sells rings. Mm-hmm. It would be incredibly easy to target men who have been in a relationship for over a year and a half, assuming that they're likely to be proposing soon. So, you know, you think about that. We self-enter so much information, and so we're able to get this content to the people who are most likely to be looking for it. And it's not a matter of finding them and shoving it in their face, because, of course, they're only going to click if they're interested. But the tools that we have with these kind of self-entered information on social networks allows us to really easily identify people who are most likely to engage with this sort of content. So hopefully, in an ideal scenario, it's a win-win where we're helping people find things they're interested in, and those people are coming back and viewing something in a way that benefits both the brand and us so that everyone is happy. We're able to really close the loop on the content.
So how are you able to access this information on Facebook? Are you using their advertising tools where you click, you're boosting something, and then you sort of refine mm-hmm. the people you want to target that ad to?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is always sort of a part, you know, I work with the brands and helping them decide who their audience is, and then I work and tell them, you know, what the relative size of that audience is based on, user data that is public data, you know, about mm-hmm. how many users there are and about how many people have liked a page, for example. And I can certainly make suggestions about, you know, what they can add in. And on Twitter, the capabilities are similar. You know, you can find people who have followed similar accounts who use certain hashtags, things like that. So yeah, we're using either boosting posts, or we're creating sponsored posts. So you'll see in your Facebook feed it shows up as a post just like anyone else. Look, it's from, you know, our page, from our T Brand Studio page, and it says promoted or sponsored post in the top, and it'll show up just in your feed like everything else from your friends and your coworkers and your family would. On Twitter, that's the form of a promoted tweet. So again, showing up right in that same feed from us, and it will say, you know, promoted. It will be clearly labeled. And it's the same across many other networks, too. I think most of our advertisers are looking for the kind of folks we can find on Twitter and Facebook, so that tends to be our primary focus. But certainly, for many brands, there are also opportunities for LinkedIn. There may be opportunities on Pinterest and Instagram, which are, you know, getting new into this promoted pins and promoted Instagram posts as well. And I imagine many other networks are going to get on board with it, too, because it's a great opportunity to bring their users content that they're likely to be interested in.
So how do you measure success of a campaign?
I think that's always a conversation I try to have as soon as possible with a brand, because ultimately absolutely. I mean, they're the ones who are determining what those metrics are. So it's important to know up front. I think, you know, if someone is looking for something like brand awareness, maybe they feel like people don't know who they are, what they do, then we want to look at the total number, the total amount of reach we can get. So how many page views, how many people were reached on Facebook or reached on Twitter, you know, measuring retweets and shares and things like that really expand their reach and get their name out there. Sometimes they're looking to acquire new fans. So maybe in that case, we're looking to see how many follows their accounts get and can we tag them in our posts that are being promoted and things like that. I think every advertiser has their own goals and sometimes a combination of goals. So I'm always trying to help them, you know, figure out the best way to do that and making best recommendations to make sure we have a strategy that's in line with what those goals are. In terms of the content itself, maybe not even from a social perspective, it's one of the things that I think is strange and also fascinating about this gray area where we work, where we're creating advertiser content, is the idea that while we sell this much like an ad placement, you know, and you want to think about total impressions and you want to think about click-through rates and conversions, we have to remember that at the end of the day, it's content. And, you know, if it has a headline and it has a lead and it has videos and a photo gallery, then we should be measuring that the same way any newsroom would measure those things. We want to know how many people viewed it, you know, how many people engaged with it and said something positive, you know, engaged in a conversation or a debate about an issue. We want to know how many people shared it with a friend and said, hey, check this out. This is really interesting. You know, the same way a reporter, you know, checks on their story and how do you know if you had a good story? You know, how many people commented on it? How many people sent it to a friend? I try to remind people that we can use those same metrics when we're talking about content as long as it's editorial in nature.
Is there something that you're using that you're beyond just clicks and likes to sort of measure reader engagement on that page?
So we've got a couple tools that we have at our disposal that are either internal tools or third parties that we use to help that, you know, a lot of our competitors use as well and a lot of our colleagues in the publishing industry. These are groups like Chartbeat and Moat, right, and Simple Reach is one of our primary ones. They allow us to measure so many stats, sometimes maybe too much information that we can gather about a page. So everything from how fast people scroll and where their cursor tends to hang out on the page, you know, how many the average seconds they spend on the page, all of those things we can measure. And those aren't all relevant to every advertiser. I don't know how much scroll depth or scroll velocity can tell you about whether someone's engaging with your brand. But I think they contribute to sort of an overall picture of how much people are engaging with the content.
And I would imagine that would also, you know, if you begin to see a pattern of how people behave on a page, that it could probably help you in future campaigns as to how you want to do your layout or how you want to present content, something
yeah,
like that.
So, absolutely.
So,
and,
go on.
And one of the things that helps too is for me, because I occasionally get to help with creating the content that's on the website. You know, if I get to write a piece, and I'm also doing the social distribution for all of our campaigns, I can sort of cross-reference those insights. So if I know, for example, the piece we did with Netflix, checking on something like what clicks better, the word prisoner or the word inmate, you know, and those tiny little insights that I can then go and apply across network and say, well, I noticed on our website that, you know, people click on the headline that says inmates more often than the headline that says prisoners. So I'm going to change our tweets and our Facebook posts to say inmates instead of prisoners as well. And then watching to see what effect that has. And it can work the other way too. If I notice something on social that people are sharing or liking something more because of a certain image or a certain word, then maybe we can take those insights back to the site and change the way we're driving traffic to the page based on those insights. So it really allows us to have the entire strategy in-house, and the power of the insights we can combine is much stronger that way.
Do you feel that you have sort of maybe an overarching, you know, approach to how you put these campaigns together, that, you know, these are some of the things that we've learned that seem to be working well, and then you sort of go into whatever the particular needs of the advertiser are and sort of combine those two to come up with a campaign that one would hope would be successful for them?
Yeah, I think, one of the things that I think are general insights for any brand or publisher or anyone who's trying to get engagement on social, I think we find that images work really well. Whenever mm-hmm. we can include compelling images in a Facebook post or in a tweet, they're generally going to get, you know, more buzz. When we're talking about Twitter specifically, they have a system called Twitter Cards, which rather than just attaching an image and also including a link in your post, you can upload an image that links back to your post. So it's sort of giving you more characters to work with. Typically, having fewer characters is better because it allows people, especially on Twitter, to reshare and add in their own comments. And people are more likely to do that, to add their commentary and share rather than just share it, you know, without any context to add to give to their followers. I think when we're looking at imagery, I always try to encourage people to use less branded imagery that has people in it. You know, I mean, I think a plain product image or a picture of just a plain building or something like that, we're not likely to engage. I think as humans, we're drawn to human faces and human features. So, you know, someone standing in an area or looking out at a building is probably going to click better than just a picture of a building. So those are just some general insights we've picked up that I think, you know, most folks who work in social have probably noticed very similar things. But again, I think it depends, you know, when we work with very different types of content, whether we've got some content right now where we're talking about we did a piece with Chevron and we're talking about energy. So, you know, that kind of content has a very different audience and is perhaps less visual when we're talking about energy sources than, you know, a piece that is about portfolio diversity that we may have done with MetLife that, you know, is very intangible in terms of how you represent portfolio diversity and investment, you know, perhaps in a tweet image, and comparing that to the piece with Netflix, where maybe we do have photos of the women that we talk to, very human faces, easy to relate to. So it doesn't make any one inherently better than the other or worse than the other, but it just requires a very custom strategy for each time. And I think it's why it's so valuable when we're able to work with the brands on it and get their insights. I think many times they've got their own social teams who maybe have insights we never thought of. You know, they may be able to tell us, hey, we found this weird overlap where people who watch this television show also really like our show, or people who follow such and such account on Twitter tend to interact way more often with ours, or we know people tweet most about portfolio diversity on Friday afternoons. You know, they may have insights that they can share with us that would sort of supercharge our strategy on their behalf.
Is there anything that sort of surprised you over the last couple of years about how these campaigns have gone? Is there something that just like, wow, I didn't see this happening or something like that?
I think every time, every publisher has sort of had their own strategy about going about this. And I think that's what's been very interesting to me is seeing the way different publishers are approaching this. You know, there are some publishers who really serve as a platform and allow brands to publish their content directly onto the site. There are some that let brands have very little input. They sort of buy the name, and then the brands create, or the publishers rather, create the content without an incredible amount of involvement from the brands. And then there are publishers like us and Huffington Post and, you know, BuzzFeed and many of our colleagues who have a collaborative model. So that differs. And then many of the publishers also have their own social strategies where some, like ourselves and HuffPost and BuzzFeed, have created these secondary social accounts. So we're not posting from the main accounts. We have HuffPost Partner or, you know, T-Brand Studio or BuzzFeed Partner, Studio at Gawker. You know, they have their own social accounts where they're pushing these things out, mm-hmm. whereas some others are leveraging them within their own editorial handles and the same accounts on social where they share their own editorial and newsroom content. So it's interesting. I think every publisher has had to sort of define their own best practices. We're in a very lucky time that most of this stuff is new enough that we are still able to define our own best practices and create a strategy, create a set of rules and a set of norms that are a perfect fit for our publisher. And I think for the Times, I think that separation of church and state makes total sense for us to have this really be a separate strategy here within the advertising department. I think it makes total sense for us. I think a lot of digital natives are, you know, like HuffPost, BuzzFeed, Gawker, some of these others, have the unique ability that they're so digital native, their audience is more used to them being in a digital environment and has a very clear understanding of what those lines are for them on digital, or maybe where there aren't lines at all. So they have that liberty of being able to sort of test the boundaries and figure out what they are comfortable with and their audience are comfortable with. So to me, it's just been fascinating to see as each different publisher has come on board with native and continues to come on board with native, how they're approaching it and what their own best practices are.
Do you ever have any conversations with a newsroom about the way they, you know, share their content on social media?
No, I think for us, it's been very important for us to sort of figure this out on our own here in Two Brand Studio. You know, our social team here has a lot of experience, and I'm sure they have incredible insights. But I think it's really only fair to our audience that, you know, we keep some of those things separate. And we would never want there to be a perception of any sort of bias. So that's, as someone who comes from a journalism background, I think that's important enough to me that I'm not even concerned. I think we've got a great team here, and we're building our own little audience. And it makes it a little more fun. It's a challenge.
It sounds like it is. And you know, I know there would be some people who would like look at this. Oh, this is advertising. This isn't journalism. This is journalism. This is an organization that is functioning in the same space as a lot of publications are, that are having to make the same type of decisions. You know, how am I going to get my content out there? How am I going to find this? How am I going to get this story that I've written for this particular person? How am I going to reach that person? And you know, and then analyzing the results. These are all things that we're all doing in digital. And it's neat to hear somebody who's doing it from the advertising side, from the side that's making money.
I think for me it's been really interesting too, because I do come from a journalism background. You know, my undergrad and graduate degrees are both in journalism. And you know, had you asked me 5 years ago if I thought I'd be working in native, I probably would have said, "What's that?" You know, to be totally honest, I think most of us would. But I think for me that gives me a great perspective in that I'm doing this the same way I would do it, and that I did do it when I was working in newsrooms. So you know, and I'm doing that with the same intentions and the same goals of informing people and being truthful and being honest. So not only does that help, but I think it also makes me feel better to know that the work that we're doing here in T-Brand Studio is helping to support the journalism that happens in the newsroom. So, you know, there's sort of those two pieces that play into it. It doesn't feel bad as long as we can go home at night and know that we've done our best to provide good content for our readers, and that the work that we're doing is supporting the great content that our newsroom creates. I think we're doing something right.
Yeah, no, there's all types of content, and you know, no, I mean there is. I mean, you know, some of it's paid, some of it's targeted towards business and, you know, certain types of audiences. And, you know, people, I mean, a lot of people don't think about this, that advertising is something that is useful to people. It, you know, it informs them of products, and, you know, beyond just it's paying for the news that you get, but it's also, you know, oh, I didn't realize that this was something I'd be interested in purchasing, or, oh, this is a TV show, you know, Orange is the New Black, that I want to see. And, oh, I didn't realize that. There was some truthfulness to that about the stories about women in prison. So, I mean, there are lots of, this is all, as long as we all play in our carefully demarked, you know, sandboxes, I think we're all okay with that. So how did you get into journalism? How did you get into this corner of it?
Let's say. Quite accidentally, as I think a lot of us who are in it would say. When I got out of grad school, I'd been studying journalism up at Syracuse. And
that's a pretty good school, I hear.
Yeah, the Newhouse School. It's wonderful. So when I got out of school, I started applying to jobs, and at the time I had applied for an editorial role at Huffington Post, and they came back to me and said, you know, looking at your experience, we have this writing job, but it's on our business side. It's for this thing called native advertising, but it looks like, you know, your skill set might be kind of geared toward that, given that you've got, you know, a few jobs that hint at some of the skills required here, the social stuff, client work, things like that. So they sent me the job description, and I Googled native advertising. I had never seen it before, and the job was Native Advertising Product Manager was the name at the time, and it just sounded so foreign to me. But once I had an understanding of what it was, I thought, you know, a lot of the skills are very similar, you know, the writing and the strategizing and the helping make content that readers care about. That stuff is all the same. And if someone's going to be creating it, I would rather it be someone with a journalism background than maybe someone who's pure marketing and doesn't have that experience working with content. So I took the job, and I started there at Huffington Post. And how I ended up at the Times was just, you know, a little while down the road, I saw that the Times would be starting their own in-house team, doing native advertising, and I thought, now that sounds like a fascinating environment for me to try to figure this out from an even more journalistic side. You know, Huffington Post has a model that's a little different. You know, they are digital native. They can be a little more freeform, a little more playful. You know, they can do a little bit more with lists and slideshows. And I thought that I would really like to see and experience and hopefully be a part of seeing how the Times is going to make this fit their model and their voice and their brand. So I was able to apply and you know, come be a part of T-Brand Studio over here.
Let's talk a little bit about your experience with social media. You know, how did you, you know, how did you get these skills? What do you like? What do you dislike about social media?
Yeah, so I think, my first experience with social media, I mean, some of these things, I can't even really remember how I got started. I think I was lucky to grow up in a time where adopting these things was just sort of happening for my peer group.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't remember joining Facebook, but I know that I've been on it for a long time. I do remember joining Twitter because I was actually a holdout. I didn't want to do it for some reason, especially early on when people were really just talking about themselves and not using it as a means of curating news and content. I didn't see the appeal. So I held out for a long time, and I remember my first tweet was, "I can't believe I've held out this long." when I finally did give in, but Twitter has actually become one of my favorite networks. I really love the way that I can build community that we all can. I have developed Twitter friendships that turned into real life friendships via Twitter, which is great. Being able to participate in chats and follow along with trends and just reach people that you might never otherwise, you know, get in touch with and have conversations with. When I was in undergrad at UConn, I actually got offered an internship via Twitter, which was great. And it was a new media internship, so it was appropriate. And I was able to work as a new media intern at a local newspaper at the Meriden Record Journal in Connecticut, which was great. And that was a great experience for me. That was my first time doing it in an environment where I was working with, you know, good volume of content. I think, you know, we all, you know, we have our own accounts and we share things maybe that we're interested in. We chat with friends. But I think that was my first time really being mission-oriented in social, which was an important distinction. You know, thinking about, okay, what am I really trying to accomplish? Who am I really trying to reach? What do those people want to hear about? What will they or won't they share and engage with? And it really got me thinking critically about the way that I was using it. So it was a great learning experience for me. It was incredible. I think I did a little bit of social, not directly sending out, but, you know, observing and being a part of. I had an internship at Rolling Stone a few years back, and I was able to be an online intern. So I learned a little bit about the tagging, you know, SEO tagging and keywords and the way that they were pushing content out on social. So that was a great learning experience, too. And I think I've also been lucky enough to work for a few publications, student publications, and then, you know, subsequently local publications, and then obviously moving on to HuffPost and here, where I had an opportunity to directly, you know, be a part of that kind of thing, to help plan with these strategies and help come up with new ideas and plan contests or, you know, host chats and things like that. So it was sort of a slow evolution, you know, starting out with holding out to, you know, interning and really having that change of mind where I realized that this could be something mission-oriented and it wasn't something to hold out on and be afraid of, but it was something that, you know, if you really embraced it and you really think critically about your goals and how you can achieve them, that you can actually have an incredible impact and meet some great people along the way.
Did you have an aha moment with Twitter?
I think, I don't know, I can remember a few. I mean, I think one for me was I had been live tweeting some of the debates during the last presidential election, and a producer from Headline News reached out to me via Twitter and asked me to come on the show and talk about, you know, my opinions, like what did my generation, my social media generation, think? And that was incredible for me, and thinking, Micah, I have no idea how I ended up here. I was just, you know, playing into the hashtag and saying some sassy things that I saw my peers saying. And it, you know, it worked. It was great. So I think that was at least one moment for me where I realized the impact that it could have, the reach you could really achieve if you just participated in conversations, you know, and weren't afraid to be a part of those conversations.
Yeah, yeah. That's one of the great things about Twitter is it just the way that you're able to, you know, get your message out, that you're able to communicate with people, and you know, people respond back, and sometimes they're positive. They're not always that trolly, I should say. Okay, what's next for you in T-Brand Studio?
So we've got a whole bunch of things in the works that I certainly can't tell you all about, but I can tell you that we've got some great stuff in the works. We've been working with some incredible brands to come out with some really cool content. I think for us, one of the things that's really important is continuing to grow. You know, our team has only existed since January, so we're still fairly young in the grand scheme of things. So we're exploring new formats, we're exploring new strategies, new combinations of formats, and ways that we can really bring some really engaging content to our readers, and finding new ways to get those readers in the door to see what we're making. So a lot of growth and hopefully a lot of exciting new content.
Well, let me ask you this, since you sort of said this and it piqued an idea in me. Somebody who hears this and says, you know, this sounds like something I might want to do. You know, what would you say to them? These are the skills you need. This is how you should go about it. You know, what would you say?
I think part of it depends on the role that you want to play. I think the great thing about this is that, much like a newsroom, there are roles for really any kind of skill set. I mean, we have video producers, we have designers, we have project managers, we have writers and editors, we have developers. I think the most important thing is to find out what skill set it is that you already have and you already love, whether that's writing or designing, you know, shooting video or being a developer, and really hone that skill set. And then just pay attention to what's happening in the native space. Take a look at Digiday and Adweek and Ad Age and some of these other industry publications. Listen to podcasts, participate in blogs and Twitter chats, and just keep an eye on the content. You know, see who's producing what, who's getting into this space, who's really killing it, or who's maybe making a mistake that's getting them some flack. And just try to gain an understanding of what type of branded content is out there, what you think maybe is good or bad branded content, and see if you can find out which publishers are hiring. I think the most important thing is to just look out for those buzzwords, you know, set up some searches or some alerts, or check out your favorite job sites and look for words like native and branded and sponsored. There are so many teams, and not just publishers, but agencies too, and even brands themselves, who are setting up these units to create this type of content. And if you've got a really sharp skill set, you don't need to have experience in branded content or experience in advertising. You just need to have one of those skill sets that can be used to make great content and find someone who needs you to do that.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a good place to stop. How can people find out about the T-Brand and you?
So you can find me on Twitter at mdiesel, and you can find T-Brand Studio on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest as T-Brand Studio.
Okay. Well, that's or you can Google it.
Yeah, you can Google it too.
It's gotten to the point where that question is almost useless anymore. Does people just search for somebody? if you can't figure out the search engine, then you probably shouldn't be on a computer or on your phone.
True.
I'm just saying. Okay. Well, this has been great. Thanks for talking to me. This has been fascinating stuff.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find more info on us and download other episodes at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.